unbelievable or something.
What's unbelievable, that you're here?
Yeah. I never would have guessed it anyway.
Why, what did you set out to, what did you think you were going to end up doing? Yeah.
Well, I thought I'd be a historian, probably working in historical museums, because uh-huh. that's where I spent a lot of my time. When I was in college, I took part-time jobs in museums, did a lot of research, things of that nature. I was really interested in talking to people who had lived some of that more recent history. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of interviews with old fishermen and things like that. I was really interested in snapper fishing, you know, back in the days when they still sailed the boats. A lot of guys I knew how to sail schooners, you know, years back. So I was... from there, since I had done museum work, I'd come over here.
Where were you? Excuse me. Where were you when you were?
Okay, I was in Pensacola, Florida. Mm-hmm. That's where I grew up, and they had a lot of historical museums and sites up mm-hmm. there. So it was a really nice place for someone interested in history. But I was working in the preservation board over there, and I'd just gotten my master's degree, and I needed to work somewhere. And I saw the job opening over here at the Stephen Foster Center, and you know, just to have a full-time job there for a while that tied me over, I became a boat captain over here, and I did that for about a year. And I also worked in the museum as museum guide and things like that. And of course, later on, when the program was started up, the Folklife program, they asked me to be the archivist for it.
Let me move this in.
Yeah, I'm sort of soft-spoken.
Any changes? I think that's all right. Mm-hmm. So you were a boat captain. How was that? Was that more or less boring, or how did that go?
No, there were some good times and bad times on that. The whole time I was boat captain, it was river was low, and we could only go a couple hundred feet, and there were a lot of complaints about it because the fare was still the same rate, and we didn't come down on that. And so it was rather hard breaking into that job trying to entertain people and show them the beautiful Suwannee River when there's hardly any of it there. So, and it was all right, but I didn't want to stay on the boat, to
so
be sure.
So you were glad to get into the
end of it. Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. End of it. Well, what is your work like now? What kind of duties do you perform?
Okay, I do, when they bring in field work, I do a lot of the, I put it in a form where it can be retrieved easily. That involves typing up cards for a card catalog, indexes, putting it in a reasonable arrangement. We get quite a few things in now. We have 4 to 5 field workers out at a time, and that's an awful lot of material coming in. I don't think people really realize how much it is, but it is a really big job to get all this information down, because we do index a lot of our things quite extensively, and
Did you have to devise a system, or are there systems that you studied? Or
there was a system already set up from the Western Kentucky University program, and that worked pretty well. But there are drawbacks to it. We've been working to revise that and get it into a more workable form. Mm-hmm. See, the state of the art of the folklore archives is not very well advanced. They're still, they don't have any subject heading lists standardized like the Library of Congress. There's nothing set about archives in general. So you have to take your collection and build your finding aids to fit the type of collection that you have, because your type of collection lends itself to a certain type of arrangement. And so we're sort of grappling with that mm-hmm. at this time, but I rather soon, in probably about a year, we'll have this computerized and the subject heading list probably a very good one. And I think there hasn't been enough work on that in folklore archives throughout the country. I think it'll be one of the nicer archives in the country when we get through. because we're working towards making it the materials more accessible, quicker and faster, and we're going to set up more for private researchers. As time goes on. Right now, we do a lot of in-house work, and that's a lot of my job is helping the folklorists keep their materials straightened until they get it into final form. And so I'm very tied in with their individual projects many times.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're a big help. Just the fact that you know probably more than anybody else what is in the library, what's in the collection. Is it primarily, I assume, audio tape?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And some records and photographs, you deal with photographs?
Mm-hmm. We have over 1,000 photographs at this time. We have probably 700 reel-to-reel tapes now, and probably about 1,000 items in the vertical files. That's rather extensive. But the most of our folklore materials are concentrated in the tapes many times.
Cause and then you're involved in transcribing those. It must have taken off in the last few years. How long have you been here?
As an archivist, about 3 years ago.
Have you seen
three?
A great leap in the amount of material flowing in?
Oh, yes. Yeah. At first, it was just Peggy and Sherry, her assistant. And then I came on, and Peggy was doing field research and projects. And so there wasn't very much coming in at that time. Then all of a sudden, we had three or four more people come on board who were doing field work. And that, of course, quadrupled the amount of work going on. Our projects increased. So we have a great flow of material coming in all the time. And this is a very rich source of material on folk life. I know we've only scratched the surface in the state, but it is a very interesting and a very interesting collection of the different types of cultures and people we have in the state. It's a real treasure, I think.
Well, you grew up in Pensacola.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware? I guess you must have been aware when you were growing up of the variety of culture that was in Florida.
Yes, there was.
As an outsider who came, I was astounded to see all the different things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I learned more when I came over here. Of course, I was in a sort of a port town, and we had a lot of ethnic groups come in earlier in the century, but they were sort of melted in. And so I didn't see quite the variety as I'm aware of now in the state. I don't know how many groups there are. I think there are in excess of 60 different cultural and ethnic groups that are of any size in Florida.
Well, I was surprised to learn that this is one of the largest folk centers in the country. There aren't many that compare with this, as I understand it, on a state sort of basis.
Yeah, that's true. And it's the largest, and I think it's one of the most highly respected, too, because our staff is made up of some very talented, very bright, very respected folklorists and ethnomusicologists, you know, from the country. And I think that's what's made this program so respected and so unique, too.
One of the drawbacks, it seems to me, of the program is that it's so little known. As I travel with them throughout the state, and they say, well, we're from the Florida Folklife Center, and people just sort of look at them like they're nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what can be done about that. It's not your job. We're just talking now. Do you have any ideas about
it? I'm sure as more programs are made public on the public stations, radio, more of our work that we get in front of the public, which is our goal, because we're a state agency and we're, you know, working for the people to bring them, you know, views of their culture to them, I think it'll become better known. I think, you know, the work is just going to progress to a point to where it is a well-known program.
What do you see as the primary function of it? What's the point of it all? Can I ask you a philosophical question?
philosophical. Well, I think it's just letting people see the richness and variety that they have right here at home. And so many times people don't feel themselves as having something special, and they really do. And I think feel like this is part of our job to show them how special they are, how special their neighbors are down the street, down the state. And I think it will help people, you know, feel better about themselves. It'll help groups interact better, you know, if they know a little bit about each other.
You have any favorite stories or things that have happened to you in this work? You don't get out in the field much, do you?
No.
You miss a lot of the really weirdness that they get into.
Yeah. I could probably tell you some sea stories because I was a
commercial
fisherman.
Tell me some sea stories. I'd love to hear some sea
stories. Well, no, I guess this is probably one of the most interesting pieces of folklore I ran across, but this is before I even heard of folklore as a discipline or anything. But I was a commercial fisherman out of Niceville, and I went on a couple of trips, and I was very interested in boats. I learned all I could about boats, knot tying, whatever. And I'd never been away from home too much, and I got on this boat called the Salvator. It was an old Greek sponge boat, and the front half of it was, the back half was a part of an old snapper schooner that had been put together in the 40s, and the two halves were older than that. And it was a schooner rig, of which the back sail was still used. There's a boatload of everybody on there was an alcoholic except me. And, of course, they started borrowing money from me right away when they saw that I was a greenhorn. And they also knew I wasn't the real fisherman because I didn't ask the captain for money. And so, you know, that was a dead giveaway. Anyway, we left on this trip, and the first mate sort of introduced me to fishing, and I guess it was a very folk process. He started telling me about the different signs of the weather and things like that, and really telling me, and I guess it's in this traditional manner, which I really didn't think of in those terms then, different signs that he knew how to find water even and, you know, on land. And he told me several stories, and one was that every time he saw a falling star across the bow, a friend of his died on shore. And so he told this to me before we left the wharf there. So we left, we went off mainly Louisiana. We're gone for about 10 days, didn't see land all that time. And one night we were running from one a snapper bed to another, and we were sitting on the bow, and we saw a star, a falling star, across the bow. And I said, "Well, Joe, I guess one of your friends died," and I was going to see, you know, what he'd say about it. And he shook his head in dead seriousness. He says, "Yeah, happens every time." And so I kind of laughed to myself. I said, "Boy, this guy's really playing it to the hilt here." You know, of course, I didn't think he believed it at all. So when we got back, we'd been out of right radio contact with our port for days and days. When we got back, the first thing someone told us as we came up to the pier was that the first mate of another boat had died in a car wreck. He was a close friend of Joe's. And we figured out it was about the time we saw the falling star. So, but, you know, they're so superstitious. I mean, I could talk all day on the superstitions they had. Mm-hmm. Most superstitious group of people I've ever seen, really.
Fishermen.
Yeah.
You think it's true more of fishermen that go out like that for long lengths of time? They have more time to worry about what's going on back home?
What's worked? Most of these guys had left their homes and their wives, and they were sort of on their last leg. Most of them were winos and alcoholics of one sort or another. They'd all been divorced just about and didn't have any home ties. A lot of them, when we got back to shore, would have to sleep in the weeds until the next boat went out. So they just lived like that. And the ones I was around, of course, there are other men on other boats who were a little more established, had families and things.
But how old were you when you were doing?
it was 20, 21, mm-hmm. something like that. But I'd just never been around that sort of thing before. Yeah, it's really different.
Uh-huh. Very young person. Well, you're not too old now.
Well, I'm 30. That's not too old.
No, Do you think you're here for a while? I'm pretty happy with this, I reckon.
Yeah. The longer that I'm with the program, the more I see the possibilities of it, and the archive is, I think, will grow more and more in importance. I think the collection will have so many unique things in it, since we are in a state that has probably the greatest variety of folk life that you can just about find in the country, I think. I think it'll become a really important archive and collection, and it interests me more and more when I see these things building, and it makes me want to stay around longer and see what's going to happen to the collection.
It'd be hard to turn it over to someone else, kind of like giving up a child or something.
Yeah, I guess so, something.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly been fascinating to me. I really enjoyed my relationship with this bunch over here. I learned a lot, a whole lot.
Yeah, just the human interest of it is so great. Many of the newspaper men who write on human interest stories get material from us sometimes, or leads to people.
I know when those NPR people came down to do their Florida shows, it was like Old Home Week when they were doing All Things Considered from Florida. This was a few months ago.
Yeah,
they had all your people on the radio. It was like Old Home Week. Hearing them all again. I mean, they had Ida, and they had Gamble, and they had Will, and they had all those.
Oh, they did.
And you do begin to feel possessive of them in a way, don't you? I do. I find myself, just because I know them. I mean, somehow they seem like family. Cousin Thelma's right, I guess. You just start thinking of people as cousins.
Oh, yeah, you get real close to them. Of course, the folklorists deal with them so closely that I know they get really strong ties with the different people they work with, and they feel responsible for what happens to them, as far as reporting on what they do and collecting it, and it's almost like family ties sometimes that they develop, or very close ones anyway.
I know they sometimes have to loan them money for this or help them out with that. It's really interesting how they become dependent on one another, because obviously the folklorists are dependent on their sources for their work. It's a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. And I remember a funny thing that Alan Jabbour said here in this room once. He was talking about doing some work in Virginia with some fox hunters, and he said that as a folklorist you tend to go in and think of yourself as the documenter and these people as your subjects, and you're writing it all down, but at the same time those people are documenting you. It's all working both ways.
Oh, yeah.
It's easy to forget that they're just the same old people as you are. So you're not the pro and they're the rustic.
Well, many of the folklorists go in with the attitude of learning something from the people that they're collecting from. And I think it works a lot better like that. I mean, it certainly wouldn't work for them to come in with any kind of overbearing attitude, and they don't. They're very sensitive to people and about their personal character things.
Do you ever want to get into the field?
Sometimes I do. Yeah, I'd especially like to go back and collect some of the things on the fishing fleets, because I learned a lot of it myself, and I know there's a lot out there, and to me it's very interesting. I think it's a very rich field that we've done some research in it, but I don't think quite enough.
Mm-hmm. One more thing I want to just talk about. I started to get into it a little bit with Mary. Mary studies baskets, and she studies what you do with baskets and how you make baskets and how the traditions are handed on, and you're interested in fishing. But it's really more than that. It's just an excuse, it seems to me, to get to know people and to be able to transmit your ways of doing things and your value system when you're learning fishing from the old man, it's not as important that you're learning about fishing as you are learning about him, about the people. I don't even know if that's a question. I guess it's not a question. I'm just trying to get beyond the specifics of folklore. You know, people think of folklore as, yeah, okay, this is, you make baskets, or this is how you make beaded clothing, or whatever, but there's more to it than that, isn't there?
Yes. I think it kind of comes over to a general attitude that I think I have, and many of the folklorists on staff might, that you try to learn something from people that you meet and learn more about them, because each person has a lot of rich things within themselves, and I guess that's just sort of a personal philosophy, that each person, you know, has a little gem inside, and you just have to you know, kind of dig around and, you know, in a little surface, and you know, nearly everybody I've ever met has something really special about them. And I guess that's what our program's all about, is bringing out these little gems and people.
And it seems to me, I guess my point was that the basket or the jacket or whatever they've made is just an excuse. It's just a sort of a vehicle. It's not always comfortable for people to talk about or to show their essence, but somehow through their work and through the way they present it, then you have a clue to that. You can glimpse it.
Yeah, that comes through.
I think that's enough, unless you have something more you'd like to get into. Anything else you think would be interesting?
I'm sure there are a lot more things, because I know I haven't really touched on in a large way what I do. And
well, I got time. I got all afternoon.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I could explain it, because it's so haywire most of the time.
Well, tell me. I'd like to hear. Interesting to me, because you are a very quiet person, and it's hard to get a feeling for what you do. And you're always back there in the back. I never quite know.
I know.
What you do. I guess you like it that way.
Well, I guess I do in a way, yes. And it's just a very multifaceted job. It's not that I'm just an archivist. I do many other things.
I'm even doing some recording.
And, yes, I've done some recording, but that's the nature of the whole staff, just about. They're sort of jack of all trades, setting up recording equipment, doing some recording sometimes, setting up things for media shows, the equipment, working in the festival, rigging tents. You do it all. When we were on the road doing these folklife areas, we almost felt like carnival people, because we were setting up a show somewhere else and, you know, on the road. And then, you know, it's just, you deal with all kinds of people. I deal with, like, sometimes when the prisoners come over from the work center, you feel like a guard or something, and, you know, working with them, and just so many things come into it that our job can't be slotted into one particular, you know, title, because in the staff here, everybody pitches in and does a little bit of everything, even though each person has their expertise and area of responsibility. But I think I've seen it more here than I have anywhere else, where we really pitch in and do everything from manual labor to trying to edit things, and it's almost a group project sometimes. The approach
family
is
kind of situation.
Yeah, it gets like that.
I was very impressed and touched, really, when I came over and ate with you that Wednesday. I thought that was a very nice thing to do. I enjoyed that thoroughly. And it told me a lot about the staff that you would do that. That's not the sort of thing that happens very much these days, I would guess.
Well, I think a very strong item in there is that everybody likes to eat.
I've noticed that. I think that seems to be a common denominator of the whole staff. They love to talk about food. Of course, that's important for tradition, too.
Yeah.
So they have a good excuse. But it may be gone beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Well, I guess
I think
that's about it.
That was nice. I thought there'd probably be some real useful stuff.